La lettre pro de la radio, le podcast.
World App General Assembly at Pullman Paris Tour Eiffel. WDAB17 is the Twitter hashtag for those who wants to follow what happens here or wants to see what happens in Twitter and on the World DAB General Assembly. 200 experts from across the industry to discuss the future of digital radio and one radio and podcast session brought to you by lalettre.pro, the French daily radio industry news website. We have together with us Nick Pigott, project director from Radio DNS. You spent the majority of your career working in the radio industry, initially in programming and then moving to digital radio and online innovation with Radio DNS. Ben Poor is with us, project manager, Digital Radio, European Broadcasting Union, EBU. And Marcello Lombardo, project manager, European Broadcasting Union. So we'll start very fast with Nick Pigott, who's a little in a hurry.
Yeah, it's busy.
It's busy. You just finished your session, Nick, about the future of radio. Yesterday on France Culture, which is a French radio station, very famous for people that like culture. They talk about the World DAB, and the journalist that was talking, it was the first time he was talking about the good sides of terrestrial digital radio, strangely, saying that it was anonymous and free, which was kind of fun. How IP can be a complement to DAB?
Well, I think what we are learning is that user expectations of media experiences are moving ahead very, very fast. And they're being reinvented by companies like Apple and Google and Netflix and Spotify. And if we don't improve the experience of using radio similarly, it will just disconnect with people. We'll have a great technology, but they simply won't find it easy enough to use. And by far the best way of improving the experience of using broadcast radio is to borrow some of the technology from the internet to do it. So we rely on the really strong and unique strengths of broadcast in terms of its pervasiveness, its relatively low cost both for listeners and broadcasters, and its reliability to do the thing it's great at, which is deliver real-time audio to people. But then all the other things that people are now expect from their media experience, a nice, easy-to-use user interface, discoverability, voice control, images, more information about what they're listening to, are all great things to be delivered in parallel using internet. If you lose the internet, if you don't have the internet, if you just want to have a free radio experience, you still get the core experience and it's still fine. But when you've got all of those other things added alongside it, the overall experience is on a par with anything else that you'd get on a smartphone or a smart device or a connected car. And I think that's the critical message for the radio industry is let's not lose the strength of our core product by failing to present it in the right way. It will still be there, it's just it'll be so pushed down in terms of user experience that people won't want to use it anymore.
So let's talk about Radio DNS, which is hybrid radio, which is a solution to make the link between terrestrial and IP.
Yep. So our approach to this idea of sidecarring internet connectivity alongside broadcast radio is very much to take the kind of fundamental attributes of radio and map them into the IP domain. So when you are listening to your radio station, there is nobody between you and your radio station intermediating what you can listen to and editorializing it or deciding what radio stations you can listen to or not. If you can pick it up on the dial, you can listen to it. And our approach with Radio DNS is to mimic that by providing that connectivity using open standards. If you can listen to the radio station, the role of Radio DNS is to provide the information for your device to be able to connect also directly to that radio station, and then we stand back. So it's very much about taking all of those key attributes. Some of the attributes that the correspondent on France Culture said were great about radio, and seeing how far we can map those into the internet.
So you need the station to help you to fill in all those datas?
Yeah, and I think that's almost an indication of our role is not to get too involved in this. If we were approaching this a different way, and some of the companies do that, they might intervene and say, well, we'll just do this for all of the radio stations without their permission, but without them having to do any work, and we'll make this happen. The Radio DNS approach is we will never interfere with what you're doing as a radio station. Mm. That's got really good sides, but the downside is if you want to do something, you actually have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
We aren't going to do it for you. So it does put the onus on radio stations to take the first decision and to take the first steps to hybrid radio, rather than it being offered to them on a plate by another company. So yeah, if somebody wants to get involved with Radio DNS, they have to take the first step.
Okay, so to take the first step, to be concrete, what's what can they do?
So we set the bar very low. In my estimation, about of all the things that we could do with radio to make radio great again, we set the bar fairly low, and we say, put your logos together in some sizes that are consistent, and put those on a web server somewhere so they can be accessed publicly, and then send us a particular structure of file, and we will register up your radio station, and that's step one. And all the information to do that is on our website at radiodns.org, and it's free.
RadioDNS.org?
Yep.
That's the link, and that's it.
If you go to RadioDNS.org and follow the instructions from there, we can get you on.
Last word before you leave. A little status about RadioDNS. It's integrated more and more into equipments, different equipments.
Yeah, so our big piece of news in the last couple of months is that we're now part of cars being produced by Audi and VW. So as that particular car manufacturer launches new cars into the market, they'll come with its new entertainment system, and the new entertainment system has integrated radio DNS support. So if you do that small step of making sure your radio station logos look great and are available in a variety of different sizes, when your listener jumps into an Audi or a VW car, they will see your station logo and it will be right and it will look great when they tune into your radio station.
Okay, that's a nice message. Thank you very much, Nick.
Thanks,
Piggott.
Philippe.
We release you. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for finishing this great World Up session with the future of radio. And we're going to go on with Benjamin Poor. Ben or Benjamin?
It depends what language you're speaking. If it's in French, I think Benjamin sounds a lot more lyrical.
Okay, so Benjamin, you joined the European Broadcasting Union earlier this year as project manager for radio. You were in UK commercial radio sector, and in the founding team for Radio DNS as well.
Yep.
So that's the natural link to Nick Piggott. What's your view on that digital and terrestrial hybrid solution?
So as you mentioned, I'm kind of a long-term supporter of the hybrid world and the hybrid technologies. The reason I got involved with Radio DNS all those years back is because I think that providing those new user experiences, new functionality, and making great radio content reach further is really possible only using open standards, open technologies, and things that broadcasters themselves can control and also surface. So it's all about broadcasters maintaining that direct connection between themselves and their audiences. I think certainly in terms of what the EU does for its members, its public service members, but I think that we would stress that broadcasters need to maintain that direct relationship and be aware of the relationship they're building up with other third-party gatekeepers and where they see themselves in 5 years' time. I think, as Nick says, it's sometimes easier to go down routes where companies offer you things, but you really need to be aware as broadcasters of where that takes you in the future and where that takes your relationship with your audience.
Okay, so what's your daily job at the EBU as this responsible for manager for radio at the EBU?
So I work inside the EBU's Technology and Innovation Department. Mm-hmm. We're a crack team of specialists.
Okay.
And I'm the guy looking after radio, ably assisted by my colleague Marcello, but also my other colleagues who look after other more complicated things like spectrum and other related issues, but I'm purely focused on radio technologies.
UK has always been very pioneer in terms of research and development. I remember some meetings at the BBC with people coming with all kind of receivers and IDs. Is that something that is in at the heart of the UK radio people to research, to develop? Because in France we don't have that kind of feeling of research and development for radio.
Well, I think it's been a long part of UK radio, and as you say, the BBC are very, very strong supporters of innovation. Commercial radio too. So as you mentioned, I come from UK commercial radio. Working with Nick and others, we really put some resources into developing new technologies, which was very unusual at the time. but our commercial partners also work with us. A very collaborative environment. We collaborated very widely with the EBU and other European partners. Mm-hmm. And I think in France there is innovation happening in radio. Radio France, for instance, is great innovators in the world of radio. And I think broadcasters all over Europe and beyond realize that actually investing in the future of radio is the way to make it survive, is the way to reach new audiences in new ways.
Marcello Lombardo, you work actively on Spectrum and for digital terrestrial television, digital radio and ultra HD TV. At the moment, you are keen on ensuring the relevance of public service broadcasting, mixing innovation and audience trend. You worked on a study about 4G, 5G compared to terrestrial digital radio. How was it welcome from the industry? And I was trying to. I mean, how is it future proof? How can we believe that what you did in your study will be real? I mean, in 10 years, it will still be the same. That broadcasting, if I resume a little, broadcasting is cheaper than 4G, 5G.
Well, I could answer for 1 hour probably this question, but let's say that this document was very well received by the broadcasting community. It was surprising, but it means that it was a piece that was missing in a business case that has to be proposed to broadcasters and decision makers, even at the government level. Now, the question. If this study will still be applicable in 10 years' time, mm-hmm. about the economic value, I don't know. And the answer is simple. The problem is about the telecom operators and their decision about the cost for their developing their networks. Now, from the broadcasting point of view, we have a set of requirements to allow a platform to be considered viable for the distribution of audiovisual content. And key parameters are, for example, free-to-air, universality, reach, ease of use, availability, resilience, and so on and so forth. At the moment, it's not only about the cost, but it's also about these key requirements that are not fulfilled on a mobile broadband. Now, for example, there is a lot of hype about 5G, but 5G at the moment, it's just a list of requirements. So we see nothing about 5G, and in any case, when 5G will be deployed, somebody will have to pay for the network, and that cost will be on the customers eventually. So I don't see in a short future the situation changing, and we need in any case to have a platform where broadcasters can still have prominence in the territory, which is terrestrial broadcasting, because let's be honest, TV and national TV and national radio have the word the adjective national before. Mm. In an internet world, everything is in the cloud. There is no boundaries. There is no limitation to the editorial area. So what we say about the importance of having terrestrial broadcasting, TV and radio, is that it enhances local content production. It helps the growth of economy, employment, the development of talents, and so on. So having a terrestrial platform, despite all the economics that in this case are favorable, it's very important, and it's future-proof from this perspective.
Okay, how was welcome in your at the EBU with the members the fact that Norway was switching off? Is it something that was important that all the countries? Was it an earthquake or just a little shaking?
I think it's watched with keen interest, as we say diplomatically in the UK. I think it's really good. I think the Norwegians had a fantastic campaign to do this. I think they've done many, many right things. I also think they're very open to learning what they could have improved on. And I think that, as you saw today, some of the other countries, some of our other members are looking with that and using that learning to plan ahead for their own digital switchover. Because I think that once this has been completed and we know the figures and we can see it's a success, which it is, with many more listeners on new stations on digital, reaching many more people with new content, I think that'll only encourage countries to actually then take the plunge themselves.
Yeah, Marcello, on the Norway switch off.
Of course, we are interested in seeing what is happening. Of course, an important point is that DBU represents the interests of more than 70 members. So we are supporters of digital radio because it's part of a strategic program. So the members united decided to eventually support DAB for the implementation of digital radio. This does not prevent any member, for example, to keep their FM transmission on, and there is no reason for FM switch off. We are pushing and we are supporters of an implementation of DAB because it provides a more sustainable platform for the future. So we're interested, and my compliments to the Norwegian colleagues because they've done a very great job and they are paving the way for others.
Yeah, it's an example that maybe other countries could use, but it has to be a body that talks about it and give that example. Can the EBU be this body together with the World App, as it's their job? Because I don't think that a lot of countries are aware, and radio station inside the countries, let's take France, that, for instance, all the manufacturers, all the car manufacturers, are having DAB Plus as in first mount, that all the brands today are doing it. I don't think a lot of people know about it, and I don't think a lot of people know that the switch off of Norway is really done the whole way. They think that just some frequencies have switched to DAB. So how can it be possible to communicate on a large scale so that everyone is aware about that in the profession? I mean, in the B2B profession.
Well, I think it's all about sharing the learning, sharing the experiences. I think, as Marcello says, it's not something that countries have to do. There's no one path to doing this, but it is a way for countries who wish to do this to see how best to do it. So certainly the EBU shares this information amongst its members. Obviously, press sites like yours and others will share this information too from conferences like this. So that's a good way to reach some of the other broadcasters. But other broadcasters may have different directions, so we'll see, I guess.
What is important in this context is that the role of the EBU is as a facilitator. So we are gathering all the experts from the members to develop together the best solutions for the future of broadcasting. What we can do is, and what we usually do, is filling the gaps of knowledge. So we try to bring together on a country basis sometimes the regulators, the broadcasters, public and commercial, to let them sit in the same room and share the knowledge. Because, for example, in the case of the economic study of the there was nothing concrete. And having something that can be distributed and explained simply, which is also part of the communication job that we run, it's a key element, because explaining complicated concepts in a complicated way will not deliver any value. So things have to be explained simply. And eventually, sometimes we have just 1 minute, 2 minutes to get the attention of the people who we are talking to, and we need to be effective. And of course, these events, for example, this is a 2 days event. Sometimes we just have half an hour, so we need to be concrete and provide a couple of figures that will convince people eventually.
So, and that's what you did at the IBC with Swedish Radio as well. I mean, you showed what was the future of the studio. Mm-hmm. And just for the listener that were not at the IBC, can you tell us a little about that Swedish Radio, and we'll finish with that? Because that's also the future of radio. It's not only distribution, it's also how the DJs are using the studios. And it's changing.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and as Marcello says, one of our roles is to facilitate communication and be a sort of a meeting point, a distillation point for our members. So at IBC we had a stand that we provided for use for our members to help them share their ideas and their projects and show off a bit of their work to other people as well. So the Swedish Radio project was all about two parts. It's a long-term project for providing journalists a backpack for remote contribution. So what that does, in a nutshell, it frees up people to go out and actually reach the stories that they need to get to. They're no longer constrained by mobile broadcast trucks or satellite radios or anything like this. They just merely have a backpack that they can go on and do reporting in the field where it happens very quickly. So they demonstrated that they use this in Washington at Trump's inauguration. They demonstrated they use this in a raft race, for instance. They put it in a waterproof bag. It just allows you to reach and gather stories from much further places. But the other really interesting thing to me that they demonstrated, and I also went to one of their studios in Sweden to see this, was that they have a brand new concept for a studio, which is essentially two tablets. That's it. They have a whole production of that studio, that feed.
It's beautiful on the pictures.
It is beautiful. And it forces you to answer what is the radio station of the future. And yeah. So those sort of ideas are really good to talk about.
And the fact is, it's also changing the way you're working. Mm. As a DJ, and that's what I think is important, is like the technique is also now used, and it makes a big change for the DJ, for the users. So technicians are talking more and more with program people, and that's what I think radio needs as well, because it was two things apart: the technicians on the side, the program people on the other side. Now they are working much more together, and this is a very beautiful example. You can go and check out those pictures. It's called the Next Generation Project, Swedish Radio, and there's a lot of pictures from the IBC and from their studio. I think they have two stations on air.
Yes, I think they're definitely one, and they're bringing the second one on either now or very, very soon.
Yeah, and from what I heard, it was just an experiment. Maybe they won't go the whole way for all the studios. Do you have any information about that?
You probably have to ask them, but I'd say it's a very good idea, and I think it's one that has really benefited their online content, their on-air content.
Maybe some people were not really happy about that, so they will not be able to, because, of course, it's changing also the consoles, the equipment, less hardware, so less business for some companies, and maybe some pressure also not to change all the studios to have just screens, because that's how it is. You have a screen where you can change from your console to your automation software. So it has also some problems.
That's about getting closer to your audience. And I think anything that technology can do to get that talent closer to their audience just makes radio sound better. And I was there when they were doing a broadcast, and it sounded great.
Thank you very much to you, and thank you for this nice talk we had. Lombard, yeah.
Just
Marcello.
a very important message that here when we talk about the digitization process, for example, it's not only about changing the way we transmit radio. It's not moving from analog to digital transmission. It's more of a cultural change. It's, the world is changing. It's becoming digital with all the new services that we see. And radio is changing as well. Now, the unique selling point that radio has is curated content, local, for the people, and nobody else can replicate that. So that's the unique selling point. Now, our job and all this technology and announcement that we have, so for example, this project that we were talking about before, is to deliver the radio content to the people, because this is our job. We are broadcasters, and we care about the customers, our listeners. So it's more of a revolution of culture. So it's not the final step. Having a DAB transmission is a necessary step, but not the end of the game. It's the beginning of a journey, which also comprises studying the listeners and understanding their needs and make the technology available for them.
Thank you very much. That will be the word of the end. So we were together with Nick Pigott from Radio DNS, Ben Poor from the EBU Project Manager, Digital Radio, and Marcello Lombardo, Project Manager at the EBU as well. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And we'll see each other maybe at the European Radio Show end of January. You're welcome to. We'll have a lot of sessions, because Nordic countries will be honored, will be the featured country at the European Radio Show on the 25th, 26th, and 27th of January 2018 in Paris. Thank you very much.
La lettre pro de la radio, le podcast.